The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're not making sense.
And neither were you, Sue. I promise you on that.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 482 for the week of October 23rd, 2023. I am spineless cop David T. Cole, and I'm here with Whitechapel Tourism Board Sarah D. Bunting.
Again? Christ.
Mysterious phone voice Tara Ariano.
Know you are loved.
And generic sci-fi hairdo Devendra Hardawar.
Engage Max Hair Gel.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is a senior editor at Engadget and a co-host of the Filmcast. You've heard him with us before. It's Devendra Hardawar. Welcome, Devendra.
Devendra.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
We are here to talk about bodies. In which, in the present day, DS Shahara Hassan has been called in on her day off basically to do security for a white nationalist march through Whitechapel. When she notices a nervous-looking 20-something loitering around, he pulls a gun. She chases him straight to a naked corpse in Long Harvest Lane, which he says he did not kill. Then the time code flips to 1941 as DS Charles Whiteman gets a call from a mysterious assignment desk. A car will be waiting for him that night to drive to Long Harvest Lane and transport a dead body to the docks. When he finds it later that night, the corpse is dead and in the same position as the one Hassan found. Then the time code flips even further back to 1890 as DI Alfred Hillinghead is directed to Long Harvest Lane, where a crowd has gathered around a journalist who is taking photos of, guess what, a naked dead body. If it seems like three timelines is a lot for this story to play out in, guess what? This guy also turns up in the same spot in 2053. The show was based on the comic book by the late Cy Spencer and stars, among others, Kyle Soller from Andor, Stephen Graham from The Irishman, and, briefly, Johnny Coyne from Mom. Yes, the sitcom Mom. The same. All eight episodes dropped last Thursday. We may potentially talk about events from any of them or from the book, which Dave did read. Let us do the Chen check-in. Devendra, should our listeners watch Bodies?
I think so. I think it is worth a watch, but I have reservations, as we'll get into.
Okay, Sarah.
Yeah, I have a couple reservations of my own, but yes, overall, I think you should.
Dave.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a recommendation, but maybe just one where you add it to your queue for a rainy day. Not quite appointment television, but maybe worth your time.
This is not a show that I would ever engage with if we weren't talking about it for the podcast. And having finished the whole thing, I still feel like, as Dave said, it's not appointment television. It feels very missable to me. I'm not mad I watched it, but it didn't blow me away. Dave.
This show reminded me a lot of, or is emblematic to me of Netflix as a whole, which is, it looks expensive.
Yeah.
You're watching it and your eyes are telling you it's prestige TV, but maybe it's not. Mm-hmm. Each episode's ending is grown in a lab to make you want to watch the next episode.
Yep.
Forget about the last 50 minutes. Wasn't that great? Move on, please.
Yeah.
The characterizations end up shallower than you would like.
Yeah.
It never gets that tack sharp focus that is demonstrative of a single creator driven vision. Mm-hmm. And once you finish it, it's 7:12 p.m. on a Saturday, and you say to yourself, yeah, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
To me, that's Netflix.
Yeah.
And it's also this show.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also seems pieced together by various parts of Netflix's algorithm, right? Uh-huh. You like murder mysteries, you like sci-fi timey-wimey, you like all this stuff put together.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
tag-driven dream.
Right. Yeah.
Let's drill down a little bit more on why all of those things are, we all agree, very true. Starting with this, Devendra, time travel, common topic in TV and film. Uh-huh. Every creator has a slightly different take at this point. I think every viewer has their own personal peeves.
Justice for Journeyman. Come on. Yeah.
Oh. Yes.
My people.
Right to your language. Heart. Right to your heart.
Marry me all over again. Love it.
What is your feeling on time travel narratives in general? Were there any choices bodies made that thrilled you or particularly bugged you in this regard?
Oh, I love a good time travel narrative. But I also feel like just watching the trailer for this, it seemed kind of overblown what Netflix was pitching here. It's like, not just one timeline, not just one murder mystery, but four separate ones, including the future. Uh-huh. And it just felt a little contrived even as they were pitching it. And honestly, I had trouble getting through the first episode because I think this show has a hard time putting the pieces together because it's essentially four different cops doing the same thing, like finding the same body, having the same revelation. They're all sort of ostracized in their timelines for specific reasons. And I felt like that's a little too much. That's a little on the nose there. I don't know. So all this stuff just took me a while to kind of get into it. But I think by episode two, when we get more of Shira Haas's character, and I love her as an actress, I started getting more into like, okay, well, this is, you got me. You got me enough to want to keep going to the next few episodes. And somehow I got into episode four without even realizing it. So, you know, it's watchable, but at the same time, oh man, there are so many things I wish were done better.
Yeah.
We'll come back to those. Sarah, you are no stranger to watching cops discover bodies on television. How did this four-pack work for you?
It's interesting because there on paper is so much potential for it to go awry, like boringly and ineptly awry. And Devendra's right. It does kind of take a while to get going, especially if you sort of know the general premise going in and that there are these four timelines or however many, that it's like, you know, it's all one timeline. Ooh, then you're sort of like sitting there with your arms folded, like, okay, well, when are we getting to 1890?
Right.
And then you're like second screening, like, where are we in terms of like the IRL Whitechapel murders timeline, blah, blah, blah. Or maybe you're not doing that. I was doing that.
Yeah.
But it does pick up and it does have or develop as you're getting towards the end of the first episode, a good ear for when it should move you back to a certain timeline or like it's done what it needed to do in the present. Could that first episode be tighter? Sure. Should this probably only be like six episodes? Probably. But this is definitely one of those things that it's not essential, like we've been saying. But at the same time, like I think you would need to watch the whole thing in a shot or you're not going to go back to it. Mm. Like, I think if you step away from it, then you're not going to pick it back up. Mm. So it's not quite great. It's just quite good for what I was expecting, which is not the same thing.
Watching it, it reminded me of another British show from a few years ago called Utopia.
Uh-huh. Devendra was on to watch the American rerun.
Yeah, if you've seen the Amazon version, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the original UK version. And comparing and contrasting this, which is a very self-serious take on a kind of fantastical set of rules, and Utopia, which doesn't involve time travel, but is also outrageous in its own way with its premise, and also deals with conspiracies and overarching, you know, shadowy cults and stuff like that. It had a sense of humor to it and a sense of fun that this one doesn't. This one, I feel like the people involved are like trying to use The Prestige as a marker of their tone, but never had the craftsmanship to quite get there. Mm-hmm. Whereas Utopia was like this plus just people being goofy because they just can't believe what kind of situations they're in. And that carries through the show. There's a lot of like characters with a capital C in that show. Mm-hmm. I felt like this show could have used that energy, just engage with the audience more because everything is so serious and there's not a moment where anybody takes a break and just says, oh my God, what the fuck is going on here? Like they're all like, we got to save the universe.
Right.
For me, that was like the missing piece of the puzzle. Like I feel like it would have been way more engaging and would have been way more recommendable if it had that levity where they could fit it into their storyline. And that's sort of like what makes it spark, I think. And they missed that.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shades of the original Life on Mars too, which is another cop thing in Britain with a weird time, like mystery. I really like that show. I never saw the American remake. But yeah, this just feels like a melding of so many things. I also had a distinct flashback, like flashback to me, fall of 2001, watching 24 for the first time. Mm-hmm. And this show also makes a lot of use of split screen and trying to get these timelines to coincide. And I was just thinking, like, man, it's just not really doing much with this. Like, there's actually a lot of potential for the show to do something really cool by having all these different timelines coincide. And it tries, but it in like the most half-hearted way. Mm-hmm. Nothing like what 24 did with cool split screen stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Sarah, you brought up Whitechapel. You mentioned that you were second screening it. Before we even started the first episode, I declared England needs to get over the Jack the Ripper. I will give them credit for restraint on this. I expected there to be more of it, and they kind of don't really touch on it at all, except as a location, really, which was weird to me.
Yeah. If you're going to put it there, that is a weird thing to sort of have that light a touch with. Yeah. There was a network note that was like, you know, this is for another part of Netflix's algorithm. Don't get into the Ripper weeds with this.
We've got another Ripperverse show coming. Don't touch it.
Yeah. I mean, there's always
one coming down the pike.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
Lurking in an alley.
Jack the Ripper's in the comic, not as a main antagonist or figure, mm-hmm. but he does play into it.
Yeah.
There are scenes in the show where you eventually, and this is spoiler territory, so I guess let's just do this. Spurs a hoe fun ahoy. Where Jack the Ripper is one of the formaldehyde bodies in the basement.
Oh.
But he's also kind of like a Cthulhu looking dude on the bottom half. There's some weird shit going on. It may be drug induced. I forget exactly what was going on. But he does play a minor role. So they do at least acknowledge him in the source material. Mm-hmm. But honestly, no Jack the Ripper in this show, I'm fine with. Jack the Ripper being in the show would be us saying, look in the mirror and take Jack the Ripper off before you start the show. Because it would be like too much.
He's around your shoulders as a shawl.
Yeah.
Take him off.
As a whole, much like The Boys, I agree with almost every change they made between the source material and the TV show. The comic isn't that good. I didn't really enjoy it. So going into watching the show, I was just like, meh. Mm-hmm. And then like it kind of like was much better. The time weaving, you know, like interconnecting this stuff and how they made characters important in other timelines is way better in the show.
Yeah.
The book is very straight arrow through it, where this one actually loose things around.
Mm-hmm.
The characters are richer in the show. So if you've read the book and gave up on it, still the show might deliver on the premise more than the comic did for you.
Yeah. When we sat down to watch it and Dave was like, I read this book last night and I'm not excited. Like, oh, great. But then, yeah, it won him over. So with a show like this, we've already talked about the different timelines and switching between them. Anytime you have a very rich world with very siloed plot lines, I feel like there's always one where you're like, these assholes again. You're least excited when the story comes back to them. Which, was there one of those for you? And if so, which was it, Devendra?
I don't, there were things I didn't like about all of them. I feel like the one with Kyle Soler, our favorite Andor dweeb, first of all, it's amazing the difference some good facial hair can make, because he does not look like a dweeb in this. Like, he looks like a handsome dude.
Yeah.
But I just did not care much for that plot line. I was like, oh, he has a big secret. I wonder what it is. And we all know what it is. And come on, let's just get on with our lives here. Yeah, I just feel like they didn't really do much there. This entire show is very much spinning plates, right? That's what a normal murder mystery show is. Except this one's like, what if I had four plates at the same time? What if I'm cutting in between them with split screen, baby?
Yeah. Sarah, what was yours, or did you have one?
1890 timeline. That's Soler.
Yeah.
I assume. Mm-hmm. I'm not an Andor guy.
Yes. Yep.
That one was the one where a tendency in all of the timelines to be like, this isn't just about time travel. This is about the other and how we are all the other. And, you know, Jack the Ripper, it us, or whatever their point was. It felt the most labored in that timeline, but then the laboriousness of it in that timeline made it seem also labored in the other timelines, and it's like a different othering in each one. And maybe it's just like the times in which we live, but it's like, I don't necessarily need to be taken by the hand this, you know, forcefully and led to this subject matter, mm-hmm. this, you know, determinedly. Like, we're all already fucking here. So mm-hmm. pull back a little on that stuff. There's no wit. There's no, like, happiness in making a clever story.
Yeah.
In this, it is very self-serious, like I think Dave was saying. So I think the Ripper sort of, like, adjacent timeline was my least favorite, but it still wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. It was just the one where I was making more eye roll emojis in my notes.
Sure.
Than in others.
I'll flip it. My favorite was the World War II storyline. Mm-hmm. Sort of like the unsung fulcrum of the story in the end. Like, he is just sort of like the gap between two very important points.
Yes.
In the timeline. And he has his own story and he has his own reasons why he's ostracized from everything. In the comic, he's even darker of a character. Like, he's even more into the weeds with the mob and stuff like that than the show does. But I'm interested because I like stories, wartime stories that aren't about war. It's like, what are the people doing when they're not going to battle? Mm-hmm. Like, you just assume when you, like, you envision the London Blitz and what's happening that everybody's either building munitions, running to the subways, or worrying about running to the subways. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is a whole life they have to live. You know, they got to get food, you know, they got to get them, you know, and all this sort of stuff. Like, we have to live your everyday lives. And how do people, you know, comport themselves in that environment on top of being in this time travel mystery? So I did like that part of it. And yeah, the 1990 stuff was slow, but I also thought that the futurism of the 2053 stuff was just, like, unimaginative. I just thought it was pretty
so dumb. It's so dumb. And I think the first time we cut to that and we just watched, like, basically an EV that looks like it's from today with really bad wheels. Just like, mm-hmm. just no budget. They have no budget left. They're projecting stuff onto buildings. It's so dumb. Oh, man.
They do that thing where you know it's in the future because somebody decided that people, as a whole, without exception, want transparent screens.
Yeah.
Even though that would be a terrible way to view things. It would just be so hard to look at stuff if all your computers were see-through. And on top of that, her police ID has gone from, you know, just showing a badge or having a card to show to this, like, like Nintendo Switch size thing she has to present to people. Where is she keeping that?
Yeah, what the hell?
Her back pockets aren't going to fit that thing. So a lot of weird things like that where it's like you needed to hire a proper futurist, give you feedback on what you're doing with your set design,
so dumb.
Your choices. Yeah. It didn't feel like the future. It felt like 10 years ago's B-movie version of the future.
Yeah, yes. Anyway.
Also, in the future, if they have all this fancy technology, including, like, basically a existence-type implant that, like, enables her spinal cord, I mm-hmm. assume.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then why
to charge her spine, they do say. Yeah.
Why don't they have the technology to fix overcutting your bangs? Because this is what happened to this sweet future child. And it's like, get the implant to, like, reweave some things on the side.
In the future, you get fast charging or you get good bangs. You can only pick one. You don't get both.
I mean, she looks like Robert De Niro in Rocky and Bullwinkle. It's bad. Guys, that's not a future I want.
Can we just talk about some actual plot stuff? While, like, you're watching it and you're eating the popcorn as the show goes on, and they are building the mystery. At a certain point, the show flips where it then shows you all the stuff it didn't show you before in order to fill in the gaps on what was actually happening in mystery. Like, what they purposefully omitted from this scene was, like, the guy in the corner doing this. And then he, like, after this scene, he went across to the pub and did this sort of stuff. Episode 6 and 3/4 of episode 7, I thought, were things I already knew in my head that happened. Mm-hmm. But they were showing. And I was like, oh, can you just, like, have a little more respect for your audience or fast forward this a lot more than you are? Because it literally was an hour and a half of, like, oh, and Polly's the one that happened to end up with so-and-so. Mm-hmm. And this, and they just kind of went on until they got to the point where there was a decision that seemed to be the genesis of the end of it all. But so much of those episodes were like things I thought that they already had.
Yeah.
Okay. Like they already had spelled out for me and I didn't need them to do it again. And I was sort of frustrated by that.
Like the Sixth Sense sizzle reel of all the times that nobody was actually talking to him. And
but like half the movie.
Yes. It felt like this was the moment where Stephen and Graham, who plays like the future baddie and also the past baddie.
Al Capone.
He is. He's a guy in The Irishman, too. This felt like the episode where they were like, this is how we're going to get him. This is how we're going to sign this guy. Because he is one of the more famous people in this show, which is also bizarre. But it was too much of him, particularly since I felt the whole way through like he was very miscast. Like, I felt like someone more like Jacob Fortune Lloyd, who plays Whiteman in the 1941 plotline. I felt like he would have made a better version of Elias / Harker, because he has that sort of like, he feels more dangerous and he's also like kind of like sexy and intriguing, whereas Stephen Graham is just like walking through looking like Al Capone from Boardwalk Empire, where you're like, this he guy's very really shifty. Intently.
Which is funny, because as Al Capone he did bring that sort of like simmering volcano energy that wasn't really here
12 years ago. Sure. That's also part of it.
Like, was it really?
Well, something like that.
But speaking about casting, I am not a crackpot. TV people, it's okay to cast older actors as older versions of the characters we've previously seen in the show.
Yes, we'll figure it out.
And this show does like a 50-50 split where some of the people are in shitty makeup and some of the people are just like, well, she's too thin. I guess we're going to have to hire a different actress to play them in the future and that kind of stuff. It was very just like, show a person and then the first thing out of somebody's mouth is, hey, character name. That's all I need. God. Don't need to see Al Capone in rubbery, super fake, over blush, like over liver spotted skin. It was just like whoever was doing that was
calling
going to
him Al Capone. Maybe we do need that. I don't know.
I couldn't remember. And Stephen something. I was about to say Stephen Moffat, but that's somebody else. So I changed gears.
Stephen Graham. I also thought that in the 1890 plotline, like the daughter and the mom, I was like, which is which? Like they looked like they were three years apart. I truly had a long time where I was like, is this supposed to be like his, you know, his maiden sister or something? They just looked too much alike.
Apothecary in the neighborhood.
There you go.
He doesn't treat her like a daughter, really. So it's just very confusing. Yeah.
Yes, I agree.
At the end of it, again, Netflix, I wasn't mad. I was just like, I give it a tepid recommendation as an afternoon show.
I've seen worse things on Netflix. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. And I've seen, like, early on, I've seen things that are worse paced. So I was like, if this is within your wheelhouse of things you like, I feel like there is enough enjoyment. This is a good sit, as we like to say in the film cast.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's a perfectly cromulent TV show.
All right, it's time to go around the dial. Our first stop is with Tara.
Hello, I am talking about Savior Complex, the story of Renee Bach, who was raised in Virginia in evangelical circles, including being entirely homeschooled for her entire school career, apparently. In 2009, when she was 19, she moved outside of Jinja, Uganda, and started an NGO out of her home, which she called Serving His Children. It was originally conceived as a feeding program, but it eventually grew unofficially to provide other kinds of medical treatment. And she kept a blog about the work that she did, which helped drive donations to the organization, particularly through her home church back in the U.S. But over 100 Ugandan children, including some that she had blogged about, died after coming through her clinic. And the legal question became whether that was because they were already too unwell to have been saved when they first arrived, or because Bach was performing medical treatments on them without having had any kind of training or credentials or having gone to college to study anything at all, including like English. So we often complain about that doc series we watch are too long. This one's only 3-hour-long episodes, feels like it's the right size because of the complexity of the story. People who worked with Bach talk about her sincerity in wanting to help people in Jinja, but also they talk about her arrogance and thinking that she sometimes seemed like she thought she knew better than local doctors. And the heads of an organization called No White Saviors, which was co-founded by a white former missionary, are instrumental in bringing a civil case against Bach, and they use her as an example of particularly white evangelical women coming to Africa to find themselves and create structures where they can be important during the time before they, you know, go back home and marry evangelical men who are going to make them stay home and raise their kids. That's generalizing, but that's sort of, that's the vibe. That's what we're told. So the director's Jackie Jesko. She previously made a doc about Terri Schiavo for MSNBC, so she has the chops to really dig in, not just on evangelical Americans making poor choices that have wide-ranging effects on people outside their own communities, but also on how social media drives the outrage economy across the political spectrum. And I don't want to say more, because this really goes places I didn't expect. It's very thoughtful, and I thought effective in its construction. And if you're looking for more on the story, I'll link to Ariel Levy's New Yorker piece about Renee from a few years ago, but this is, all three episodes are out now on Max.
All right, Devendra, what have you been watching recently?
Sure. I've been checking out this documentary called RoboDoc, The Creation of RoboCop. And folks, I love RoboCop. And we are in prime RoboCop mode right now. There's a new game that is coming out. There's a demo for it for PC games. So I've been thinking about this movie quite a bit, and this documentary came along. It is a 4-episode deep dive into the creation of Paul Verhoeven's masterpiece. If you want to get nerdy on RoboCop, if you want to hear interviews with Verhoeven and Peter Weller and pretty much everybody involved, yeah, this is worth a watch. I think this is something like 80s nerds in particular will appreciate this, but there's some cool stories here in terms of like what inspired the, the original writers for RoboCop, how much that thing owes to Blade Runner. I mean, how much all sci-fi owes to Blade Runner, including the show we just reviewed. So yeah, I think it's really cool, and I think it's so nerdy. So if you miss RoboCop, if you want to dive deep into that metalhead, you should check out RoboDoc.
I guess it's about the movie, so they don't get into the RoboCop cartoon for children.
They do not. This is very much just the movie, but I would love the oral history of that as well,
because they make some choices.
I remember I grew up with that.
Wasn't Rocket Romano RoboCop 2 Electric RoboCop?
No, he was in the first one. He's the guy that gets splooshed against the windshield.
Sure, when does. They go
oh to with the helicopter.
No.
With a car.
It's a shame.
Just a car. It's a good sploosh though. Good squeeze.
Yeah. All right. Anything to plug there, Devendra?
Sure. I mean, I'm over at the Filmcast. You can find us at thefilmcast.com, and I write and do the podcast and Engadget. If you want to talk about, tech and consumer electronics and stuff, you can find me there.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Good evening. The convoluted tale of how I fell down a TVTropes.com/wikihole and came out at a mid-60s episode of the second iteration of Alfred Hitchcock's TV property does actually have a true crime element to it. I will get back to that in a moment, but actually I was trying to figure out just how common it is for shows to go back to the serial killer has more money and time than sense, well, in terms of burying protagonists alive, and then finding some credible way to write them out of a literal box. Not that they always survive this circumstance, but anyway, this is how I ended up parked in front of a 1964 Alfred Hitchcock episode starring novelty songster Ed with 2 D's, Kooky Burns. You may remember him best from Grease, where he played the dance show host Vince Fontaine. He's a prison lambster who, spoiler, ends up outsmarting himself to a 6 feet under degree. Nicholas Coach Colasanto is also in this episode. It's called Final Escape, and it was remade for the mid-80s iteration of the Alfred Hitchcock Hour and starred Susan Hubley and a bunch of other Reagan-era Hey, It's That Guys, and was written for television basically both times by a guy who almost died in Sing Sing's electric chair. I will be talking a little bit more about that whole bananas backstory on my true crime newsletter this week, but this is a TV podcast. So my point as far as that is that the Twilight Zone is great. I've got no kick with the Twilight Zone. I'm not trying to start beef or like a zone versus cock rumble. There was a better way to phrase that. I'm not going back for it. Anyhow, here's the point. At this spooky time of year, I would urge you not to sleep on the Hitchcock family of creepy programming if you're feeling burned out on Twilight Zone itself, or they're like running a marathon of the same 15 episodes you've already seen a billion times. The shifting naming conventions and various other IP ownership issues can make specific episodes a little challenging to find, but the 50s and 60s seasons are on Peacock. The 80s one is sort of scattered around YouTube. I'll put one playlist in the show notes. And mid-century horror anthologies are not for everyone. It's a lot of Rooseveltian elocution, people doing capital S stage business with cigarette cases and whatnot. I wouldn't say Hitchcock's take is going to change anyone's mind in that regard. Certainly, I am going to advise even fans of the vintage pacing that if a story got shot twice, you should go with the 80s version that gets the shit done in 22 minutes instead. But the older episodes do have a soothing Murder, She Wrote cadence, and I ended up semi-accidentally watching like a third of a season while doing a craft project. So solid option for playing on mute at a Halloween party as well. Hot tip for you there. Anyway, like I said, I will talk about the true crime element on my true crime review newsletter. That is bestevidence.fyi. And you can buy the memoir by the teleplay guy, John Resco, who wound up getting paroled because he did art that people thought was cool. That's at my True Crime Bookshop, Exhibit B Books. All that good stuff will be in the show notes. And don't forget that you listeners get a one-time 15% off code. That's EXHG15 at checkout.
All right, here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. We have for you the Enfield Poltergeist Apple TV Plus docudrama. Is it a docudrama, Sarah? Can we call it a docudrama?
Yeah, it is like this weird hybrid thing, but yeah, docudrama is the closest, I would say.
Co-starring the Poltergeist, you know. Yeah,
yeah. And he's like, you know, they got him like in the room with single camera and they're asking him questions, and you find a lot about ghosts. That this Friday, plus we got some other stuff as always, as ESG 15 Seconds of Fame, all that other good stuff for you. And then right here next week on ESG Prime, we welcome back Mr. Joe Reed, and we're going to talk about Fellow Travelers.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is somebody from last week. It's Aaron again. Aaron, just submitting all the things.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. Today, I am submitting Starstruck Season 1, Episode 1, NYE for the canon. Having just finished the third and final season of Rose Matafeo's outstanding series, I've been thinking a lot about what a beautiful arc this story tells, and how in particular the first episode gets so much right. The characters, writing, and sense of the world are sharp from the first scene, and its themes and relationship beats are reflected throughout the show's run. Jesse, played by Matafeo, is a late 20s Kiwi living for undetermined reasons in London, working as a babysitter and at a cinema to pay the bills. The show opens with Jesse grumbling to her best friend and flatmate Kate outside a nightclub on New Year's Eve, while Kate attempts to cajole her into not wasting their outfits on a bad attitude and at least pretend to have fun. Jesse relents, but continues to be plainly miserable as Kate gets chatted up by Ian, an undeniably dorky currency/aluminium enthusiast, whose attention Kate amazingly describes as electric. After glumly sneaking into the men's bathroom for a pee, Jesse encounters Tom, played by Nikesh Patel, who, presumably having been assured she is a very normal girl at her entrance, feels comfortable striking up a conversation at the sinks. It's an interesting meet-cute for the two leads of a show to have, mostly because it's not overwhelmingly positive. Jesse is a little drunk and annoying, and Tom is a little smug and rude. These two are not faded from the starting blocks, and at this point it could all very much go either way. The night works its weird magic, though, and after the two reassuring one another, the thought of kissing at midnight hadn't even crossed their minds, we predictably cut to them making out in a cab, and then to Tom's house, where Jesse manages to hilariously secure enthusiastic consent from Tom and herself mid-coitus. The following morning, Jesse sneaks downstairs and, while getting a drink of water, notices a film poster with Tom's face on it. She then has the shattering realization the reason he looks so familiar is not because he's the babe who works at the Shepherd's Bush Superdrug, but because he is a relatively famous movie star. The following scene is probably the heart of the episode, and watching Jesse confront Tom and how the two of them subsequently navigate her initial panic and embarrassment, landing a tidy 3 minutes later somewhere much more playfully eager, tells you a lot about these people and their relationship to come. It's probably too long to clip in its entirety, but you should really watch it, if only to see Rose Matafeo's macro and micro expressions as she gauges the situation and Tom's reactions, calibrating her own comfort and cheeky jokes in turn. Speaking of which, this scene is also really, really funny. I've seen it a bunch and I still laugh like every few seconds for the entire sequence. For me, the highlight is the sudden flashback to Jesse's mumble-mouthed reaction to learning Tom's an actor, followed immediately by the cut back to the present where she earnestly wonders aloud, "When did we eat cereal?" Jesse eventually returns home and we get her and Kate debriefing in their natural environment, aka on the couch with Kate yelling at Jesse didactically. I want to take a minute to praise Emma Seede, who takes to the role of rom-com best friend like a duck to water, and absolutely excels at the manic, over-invested energy that position often requires. She and Matafeo have excellent chemistry, and the story of their relationship across the series is nearly as important as Jesse and Tom's. It's clear at this point that Jesse thinks of this encounter with Tom Famous as a one-off, a weird, wild adventure of a young adult in the big city. Tom has a surprise or two under his belt, though, and shows up to her workplace with a transparently transparent excuse to see her again. She's intrigued, and they walk and talk, inevitably ending up at his place. Here they are again, playful and witty, as they negotiate whether or not they're going to sleep together again. You see why they like each other and why they're drawn together. I was already deeply in the pocket for Matafeo prior to watching this series, but this is where I really fell for Nikesh Patel as a viewer. His genuinely funny teasing of Jesse is good-natured and deeply attractive. It was weirdly refreshing to respond to a man being sexy in this way on TV the first time I watched it. Not to be gender essentialist and claim women are naturally better at writing appealing men with good senses of humor, but I do think it's often tricky to make a couple, especially a straight couple, feel like a good match who like each other. And Rose Matafeo and Ellison deserve a lot of credit for accomplishing that here. Jesse and Tom's second morning together mirrors their first in a really elegant way, too. Initially, things were confusing between them, but it was also exciting and sexy and low stakes. But now on the second morning, it's clear Tom might have more in mind. He asks Jesse about her family and prods her to ask him questions of substance in return. Jesse defaults to being a little deflecting. She can't seem to fathom why he might want this from her. If you've seen this whole series, you know just how much the tone of these first two mornings echo throughout the whole scope of their relationship. The pull apart and back together, the tension and release, the rhythm of their interest in orbit. It's pretty cool just how much of it is here in the first 20 minutes. The episode ends with Jesse discovering photos of another woman in the nightstand while Tom showers, then sneaking out to paparazzi, accusing her of being a homewrecker, and then humiliatingly the cleaner. She rides away on the bus, scrolling tabloid stories about Tom and his girlfriend spending Christmas together, and for the first time really stares fully into the face of what she might have gotten herself into, as Tom calls again, and she again declines. Where do they go from here? The series premiere of Starstruck deserves to be in the canon because it is a confident, balanced, and extremely funny beginning to an excellent show. The cast is charming and knows what they're doing immediately, and it is a delight to watch them do it in a series where, honestly, a lot of episodes could belong in a canon of the best television ever made. It seems most fitting the one where it all begins should at least take an honorary spot. There's a lot more to say, but I will leave that to you. I hope it all left you wanting more. Thanks.
Aaron, thank you so much. Welcome back. Devendra, you chose this for our list of submissions. Please start us off. What did you think of her case and of the episode?
I think she makes a great case for the show, which I have loved since the first season came out. I'm not the biggest rom-com fan in the world, but I think this show is a perfect balance of what makes a good romantic comedy, but also it's like deeply emotional. It's deeply meaningful. It's also what it means to be a 20-something who's kind of adrift and has not quite secured your place in the world. It's about trying to like, get yourself into some like long-lasting relationships and the fears you may have of doing things like that. It also reminds me of the Before Sunrise and Sunset, that whole trilogy of missed opportunities too, because the thing about this couple, Tom and Jesse, is that they waste so much time. And watching that kind of breaks my heart a little because I enjoy seeing them so much together. I think this first episode is a perfect encapsulation of what makes the show work. Rose Matafeo is fantastic. As soon as I finished this episode, I couldn't stop myself from going into the second episode,
yep.
Which has her dancing to Return to the Mac. I'm like, yes. She is so good. Just pure joy, like in that sequence, in her face and everything. I think the show is incredibly well written. I think she's great. Nikesh Patel also is a lot of fun, even though he can also be like prickly and smug at times too. Like it's a really good balance of that. Mm-hmm. And also like, I like seeing a pretty Indian man as a romantic lead. Like you don't see that very often. Dev Patel can't have everything. So for that reason, for many reasons, I think the show is definitely worth being in the canon. I think this episode in particular should be up there.
Excellent. Sarah, we'll go to you next because I'm obviously already in the tank. I think I talked about this like 2 or 3 weeks ago when season 3 came out.
Yeah, I think you did too.
Go ahead.
This sort of like floated up to the shell, up to the shore of TV on a shell, fully formed and beautiful, because I also like flipped into the next episode and was like, oh my God. I mean, it has these Broad City vibes, mm-hmm. but like that, the sweetest parts of that and way less sort of like, sometimes Broad City is this and sometimes Broad City is girls and I don't really care for the girls part. And so this was like, this felt not so sweet that it was like saccharine or untrue. When she mentioned micro expressions, that's so true. Like, especially in that first scene when they're in the bar and watching this character do these calculations of like, I just said this sort of obnoxious, clueless thing because I'm drunk, but because I'm drunk, I don't really care. And then the thought like leaves the space around her eyes. It's really quite difficult to do, and she's wonderful. And their banter is right on. Like, it's not so clever that it seems written. Like, you feel like you're watching actual people.
Yep.
And that's also really pretty difficult to do. The best friend is great. Their discussion where she's like, I will forever be a stain on his sexual history. And then they both start laughing like lunatics because they're probably still a little drunk. And then this weirdo like drifts to the room with the roommate's robe on. And you're like, oh my God, I would not go back to my 20s for all the golden Fort Knox. But well, this is exactly what it was like.
In the robe. And then the last line of the scene is, your toilet is completely blocked.
Yeah, like it has nothing to do with him. Like, all right, buddy. And earlier when he's like, I'm only interested in Kane, she's like, yeah, I got it. And he's like, just so we're clear, only Kane. And she's like, copy that, you narbo. Like, it's just so good.
He's such a Bitcoin bro too. Like, I've talked to that guy so many times in my work. Oh man,
he's great in Steph Letts Flats as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. He is.
It all feels really lived in, but it's not like that sort of performatively, like, look how obnoxious and self-absorbed we are. Like you get in some, like, girls, for example, is like, I see what's being attempted here, but you don't have to make yourselves so difficult to spend time with. Like, you're a TV show. I'm supposed to not hate everyone, right? When's Shoshana coming back? This was great. This was delightful. I wanted to keep going, which is one of my big criteria. And her line delivery of, that they're talking about like being weird super fans or whatever. And she's like, oh, I'm not a fan. And like, you know what she means, but it sounds so bad that it's like, perfect. Like, absolutely the least diplomatic way to put that possible. So relatable to this guy. So excellent presentation. This was a delight. And the list is 28 pages long. This is going on it towards top. Dave.
Sarah nailed one of the things I want to talk about, which is the robe guy, which is sort of like the secret formula for why I really like this rom-com, and when I'm not really a rom-com person.
Yeah. Not enough rope guys in rom-coms. Yeah,
exactly. Thank you.
But yes.
My first exposure to Rose Matafeo was Taskmaster, her season of Taskmaster. And seeing her there as sort of like a semi-neurotic mess, but also a very engaged player, and then seeing this show makes me think that she's really writing from experience. So it's this weird mix of an extremely self-assured show about somebody who is really not very self-assured. And it comes off so brilliantly and so like true. But also you get those moments where, oh, Liz Lemon is here or something like that. You get in that part of energy. Well, there's a scene where she is at her second job or third job at the cinema, and she is having a conversation with one of those annoying movie people.
Movie bro. Yes. A lot of bros in the show. Yeah.
Yep.
So Shinda lists your favorite movie according to her pin, which is not her pin, her name pin. And they're going on and on. She's having this conversation. She's trying to say, just like, get out of it. Stop having this conversation. Her solution is to say that her favorite movie is Rush Hour 2. So the discussion is, what is the best movie ever, Schindler's List or Rush Hour 2? And it just, it kind of reminded me of the time that Liz Lemon dressed up as Princess Leia to get out of court, but like in a real world situation. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's taking that like fantastical Elastic Universe energy and containing it in a way that seems so real. And when you mix that with everything else going on, with the rom-com elements, with all her friends, it's just like this perfect little vignette of somebody's life that seems so real. And everything that happens in it is like extremely sweet or funny. And it is just like an extremely winning show. And you just can't get away from it. And it keeps an even keel throughout the whole series.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I take Devendra's point that like they waste so much time, but I also feel like that feels true too. That's happens sometimes, mm-hmm. and especially when you have two people mm-hmm. like this who are both so stubborn. And like to Aaron's point, so much of the track for the whole series, not even just the season, is laid in this episode with like kissing. He's like, "Oh my God, stop trying to win at kissing." It's like that's kind of them in a nutshell. Like it's so stupid, but but this is kind of where, you know, the first season especially seesaws between like one of them is hurt by the other doing something unintentional, and then in the next episode it's the other way, and they sort of like seesaw back and forth and can't quite get it together until they do in the classic rom-com way, because there has to be conflict. But what I appreciate about this show, and I think I said this when I talked about it before, is that it feels, I mean, the rope guy is crucial. That's real. Like you need to feel like there are story ideas for all of the characters you're introducing, including like the guy she works with at the cinema. And like when she shows up at the nanny job and the kids are like, "No, we thought we were getting Shivani. Oh, why don't you just marry Shivani?" And then shows them Goodfellas because the mom went to bed because there's no groceries. So it's like everything feels thought through, but not overstuffed. It just feels like we're seeing flashes of a person's real life that is truly, really lived in with all these other characters who also have their own stories. And we get to see some of them, you know, in the season and over the course of the series too. When Aaron said there are other episodes that should be in the canon, I mean, I immediately thought about the murder mystery dinner party that goes off the rails. The cake really is just a little bit too neurotic about, and that's where we get to meet more of their Jesse's friends and stuff. And I mean, I feel like we've said it all. I can't say too much about just how great the show is, and it really does feel it's completely itself. It did wash up in a shell, like Sarah said. Like it's just so good immediately, and that's why this is a good one to consider to start, because this is the start.
Final thing.
Yeah.
That this made me realize or re-realize, which is the kind of dream job I would love to have in Hollywood, which is the person who just writes all the fine detailed punch-up stuff in a show. If I could be the guy who's solely responsible for like store names, weird people names, and movie titles like we see in this one, the poster that people are referring to when she sees the poster unwrapped in his apartment, it is for a film, action film called Full Tank of Money.
Yeah.
I just want to be the person who has to go, like, give me 20 ideas for an action film this guy would be in. I need them now. And then that's what I do.
Yeah.
I would be content for the rest of my life. All right, let's put this to the vote. Devendra, what do you say? Canon worthy or not?
Absolutely, yes.
Sarah D. Bunting.
If only because she made the Bitcoin bro get her two drinks. Yes, for me.
I'll say yes as well. Tara?
Of course.
Of course. That means that Star Trek Series 1, Episode 1, NYE, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Call it Star Trek.
America.
Did I?
That's what I heard.
It sounded like Star Trek. But yeah.
There's something. Oh, the wing.
Starstruck.
It all just kind of runs together.
You know? Yeah.
Well, I got to keep it in now, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, guys. It's time to discover who is the winner and loser of the week. And as always, live long and prosper.
Well, the winner is Coach K, coach of basketball. Do I know his full name? No. I know him as the person who wrote the book that Io Debary's character is reading throughout season two of The Bear. His book is called Leading with the Heart. And the reason he is the winner is that he has made it publicly known he is angling for a cameo, presumably in a future season of The Bear, and that he sent Io Debary a signed copy of his book. God bless. I can't fully support him because he is not in my fictional Los Angeles Lakers. As far as I know, I didn't look him up, but I'm proud of him for embracing this in the right spirit. And it did feel like they appreciated him and that it wasn't a mean joke. Like, she sincerely got into this book and appreciated the lessons that he had to tell. So, Coach K, good job.
All right. Keeping in mind, I am not on TV, Sarah, who is the loser of the week.
Also, Coach K, who was the coach of Duke basketball.
Thank you.
I married a Tar Heel. We're not going to be talking about him like he's awesome. Just kidding. This actually was sort of like it won me over a little. But yeah,
I understand.
That did seem kind of pathetic, but in a way that usually Coach Krzyzewski would not have let himself be for many years as the head coach of the Borg. Anyway. Speaking of the bear, the actual loser is your The Bear Halloween costume if you are in SAG-AFTRA, because the union has asked members not to wear or originate costumes referencing projects from struck companies, which, like, okay, solidarity, but fuck's sake. And former SAG president Melissa Gilbert called this rule, quote, silly bullshit that makes them look petty and incompetent. And absolutely, Laura Ingalls, I absolutely agree with you. Half Pint and Mandy Moore and Ryan Reynolds also think it's dumb. And I gotta say, like, I on the actual ball, maybe. Speaking of balls.
Speaking of looking incompetent, do you know what time it is?
Star Trek time?
Yeah, Star Trek time. Sub winner of the week, because I was just reminded of it, were the two guys I was playing Apex Legends with a couple days ago who had the clan tag Burf.
Nice.
Yeah. And I asked, is that a bear reference? And they're like, yep. I'm like, you're the first person that ever noticed that. I'm like, you're my people. Excellent. Here we go.
Sepinwall was just wearing his original Burf t-shirt on his, like, in a pic in his newsletter on the same day that my husband was wearing the one I got him for anniversary. So yeah, original Burf, man.
All right, guys, this is the third game time of the season. The scores are Tara with one, Value Guests with one, Sarah looking to get on the board today. And today we are playing iRobot from our longtime game time contributor, Potsy, who earns himself Potsy an extra credit topic of their choosing, plus a free shirt from the EHG store at throughmethods.com. He writes, AI is taking over the world. Can you identify which TV programs these vessels of AI come from? Here's how it works. I will play you an audio clip of a TV robot, pure AI, hologram, cyborg, something of that sort. So it's going to be some robot-y kind of thing. For 3 points, identify both the character and the show. So if you name them both, you get 3 points. If you're not sure of anything, you can ask for either half of the answer and then answer the other half for 1 point. Make sense?
Yes.
Yep.
Steal meal situation, please, Tara.
Sarah has 1. I have 3. Valued guests have Eric's meal, so 1.
Okay, let's throw it to Pinky to see who's going first.
We will start with valued guest.
All right, that means Devendra's in the hot seat. Then we'll go Sarah, Tara. We got 27 robot-esque questions for you.
Okay.
One last item of interest.
Okay.
This is the first game in which you can use your banked Mindy weather calls.
Oh!
Tara, okay. Do you have those numbers for us?
I have one and Sarah has one.
I'm going to give Devendra one too to even it all up for fun's sake. So everybody can invoke your Mindy, Devendra, weather call during another player's turn. But it has to be before I present the question.
Oh.
So be quick on it.
Okay.
I'm not telling you what it is until somebody invokes it. But if you want to invoke it during somebody else's turn, you let me know before that question gets out to them.
Do I just say Mindy?
Mindy with an M.
Okay. Not Minty.
Are we ready to play iRobot?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. We start with Devendra. I am playing you an audio clip. I need name of the robot, AI, cyborg, whatever character, and the show they are from. You can also ask for a hint if you don't know part of it. Here we go.
Is your taxonomic nomenclature an endothermic quadruped? Carnivorous by nature? Your visual, olfactory, and auditory senses contribute to your hunting skills and natural defenses.
All right, answer in any order you want, show and character.
Thank you so much for one I will know. That's Data from Star Trek The Next Generation.
You are correct. That is a full 3 points for both parts of that. All right, that's how you do it. Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready?
Yes.
And Anya, how is your money? Fine. Thank you for asking. Isn't it a beautiful night for killing evil things?
It is. That's the Buffy bot from Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
That is correct. Another 3-pointer. Tara, are you ready for yours?
Yes.
Well, I couldn't have done it without you, buddy. You're a genius.
Oh, yeah? Well, then how come I can't get my VCR to stop blinking at 12 o'clock?
That's Cheese from Friends.
Yes, everybody has 3 points. Well done. Let's get back into it to Devendra.
You are familiar with the thought experiment, the ship of Theseus in the field of identity metaphysics.
Naturally. The ship of Theseus is an artifact in a museum. Over time, its planks of wood rot and are replaced with new planks. When no original plank remains, is it still the ship of Theseus?
Hint.
All right. Do you want the show or the character?
The show.
The show is WandaVision.
Oh.
What is the AI there? The robot. The whatever.
The whatever. Oh, man.
And there were two characters talking, but I'm going to give you a little hint. They both kind of have the same name.
Yeah. Vision.
Vision. Yes. Correct. 1 point. Well done. Back to Sarah D. Bunting.
You are not the proper owners of this vehicle, so either you get out, or I will take the appropriate measures.
Hey, hey, hey! All right! Now I've heard of some far-out burglar alarms, but this is heavy! All right, Mama, do your baddest.
Good heavens, and I thought Michael was difficult.
Oh, that is the Knight Industries 2000 kit from Knight Rider.
Yeah, 3-point answer there. Tara, here you go.
Look. Hang on. There we go. Look, check this out. Look. Yeah.
Oh.
You can wear this.
My.
I know.
God.
Right? Evil cyborg versus spacebot. Love it.
I believe that is Barry from Archer.
Yes, 3-point answer. Nicely done. We are back to Devendra for your third question. Who's that robot?
I can see that you're worried, and I just want to assure you, I am not human, and I cannot feel pain.
Thank you. That helps.
However, I should warn you, I am programmed with a fail-safe measure. As you approach the kill switch, I will begin to beg for my life.
It's the good place. I'm just trying to remember her name.
All right, you got your 1 point. If you can get the character name, you get 2 more points.
1 point. When I tell you guys I'm bad at the game stuff, it's because the recall. Recall's hard.
That's what I'm here for.
It's yeah, okay. Not in my brain.
That is Janet.
Janet
from The Good Place, yeah. But you got a good place for 1 point. Back to Sarah.
Hi. How you doing, kid?
I can go to the bathroom now.
Great, yeah. Then you ever get high?
Not since I fixed the television antenna on the roof.
Oh, my God. This is small wonder. And it's, oh, what's your goddamn name? Vicky?
Yeah!
Yay!
All right, back to Tara.
Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Oh, that's it?
That's it. You want to hear it again?
No, that's fine, because I don't know the doctor's name, but he's from Voyager.
He is from Voyager.
I don't remember.
You want to put an answer out there?
Is it Dr. Phlox? No, Phlox was someone else. I don't know.
Oh, you're so close. It's just the doctor or the name of the actual thing.
Do I get anything for saying he was played by Robert Picardo?
Yes.
Future co-star of Dickinson, among many others.
We are back to Devendra. Here you go.
Impressive. But what does it even matter if I'm random or planned? My heists will still rule.
It matters because it explodes when it hits 6 levels of contrivance.
Which is exactly why even
All right, what's that show? Who's that character?
That is Rick and Morty. And
yes.
I'm going to guess Heistbot.
Oh, so close.
What?
Heistotron. Heistotron.
Gets me every time.
No. Ugh, that was a heartbreaker. Back to Sarah D. Bunting.
Someone isn't going to like that.
Can I hear it again?
Someone isn't going to like that.
Oh, it's just like a little too short. So could I have the character name, please?
Twicky. Definitely come across this character in the last year.
Might be a year and a half at this point.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Really?
Twicky was on that show that, I can't pull it. I want to keep, like, Land of the Lost has just, like, come to the front of my brain and blocked everything else
No,
out.
He was featured in the episode Space Rockers
with
Lenny Briscoe.
I could describe Orbach's outfit in that, and then I couldn't pull the name.
Buck Rogers in the 25th Century is the show.
Uh-huh.
All right, back to Tara. Tara, are you ready?
Yes.
Queen to Knight 6.
Give me the robot, I guess.
The robot is K-9.
Oh, not helpful. Yeah. Gilligan's Island!
Incorrect. Nobody's stealing that one. That is Doctor Who or that spinoff that they never really got off the ground. I think it was just called K-9, I think, maybe.
Okay.
I forget. 100% I'm sure the Doctor Who people will let me know what that show was called.
Yeah,
they love to let you know.
Back to Devendra. No comment.
Forget it. I'm going with Plan B. I'll put his brain in the robot chef.
You know that never works. The answer is obvious.
All right. So it's the second voice there, the female voice that is the robot.
Can you hear that again?
Forget it. I'm going with Plan B. I'll put his brain in the robot chef.
You know that never works. The answer is obvious.
Can I get the show name?
The show is SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, I got it. I have no clue. Come on. No.
Sarah?
SquidBot.
Oh.
That is Karen. Karen the robot or something.
Mm.
To Sarah.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger. No, Will Robinson. Danger.
Now, I will say, before you answer, Potsy made a very common mistake when he put the data for this question in the sheet, and I had to correct him.
Okay,
so let's see if you make the same mistake, Sarah.
She said the show.
Okay, show is?
I said the show, Lost in Space.
Correct.
I don't know the robot name.
When in doubt in this game, I'm going to say, because it no longer applies, you should just say robot or the robot, because that is the second thing. We had the doctor for the one with the doctor, and this is just robot or the robot. It is not, however, Robbie the robot.
It's not Robbie the robot? Really?
Robbie the robot is from the same designer.
Huh.
But Robbie the Robot is the one with the tall glass domey head.
Oh.
From Shenanigans.
Forbidden Planet.
Shenanigans.
Okay.
Yeah, two different robots. Now you know. And knowing Zap for that.
Sure is.
All right, this is for Tara, and we'll take us into our score break.
But as time has passed, I've realized I don't fit here. Perhaps I'm that one extra piece left over when a puzzle is already completed, and there is no place where it fits. Which is not how a puzzle works, of course. But who gives a shit? That is how I feel. I'm the extra puzzle piece. Okay. Hadi, Bame, let's hit the road.
What is the show, please?
The show is What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay. But it's... Okay, is it the... Is it the ghost in Nadia's doll?
Yeah, the okay. doll. The doll that comes to life and moves around.
Right. Okay, yeah.
All right, that is our score break. Tara, let's get them scores.
It's pretty close. Mm-hmm. Sarah is in the lead with 10. I have 8. Devendra has 6.
All right. So we're back to Devendra. That was just over the halfway mark, so anybody's game still. Here is your next clip.
Come with me if you want to live.
That's the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Yes. Nicely done.
I don't... Terminator? I didn't know which Terminator it is.
That,
yeah.
Okay, that is how you guessed, I'm going to say. Yeah. Didn't work out for you this time. We're uh-huh. looking for Cameron. Cameron is the character.
Really?
Yeah.
James Cameron? That was a good show. Yeah.
This is question 17.
It's pretty good.
Oh, the Spread Eagle.
It is for Sarah D. Bunting.
By your command.
Want to hear it
is
again?
That it?
That's it.
Yes, pretty... you do. A couple okay. times.
By your command.
By your command, I think.
Don't forget, everybody has Mindy weather calls still in the mix, guys. For this question.
Yeah.
Can I get the robot name?
The robot is a Cylon.
Battlestar Galactica?
Yes, that is Battlestar Galactica. That clip is from the original, but they did bring those particular robots into the remake as well. So everybody wins. Tara.
Yeah.
They will not be satisfied with anything less than the child. This is unacceptable. I will eliminate the enemy, and you will escape.
You don't have that kind of firepower, pal. You wouldn't even get to daylight.
That is not my objective.
Okay, that's the Mandalorian. And I think it's just called Nursebot? Nurse?
He is a Nursebot at that point in his existence, but that is not his name.
Okay.
Anybody want to steel meal that? There's steel meals. Nope, nobody. That is IG-11.
Oh, that's right. Can I just tell you the very funny story that I read on Discord this weekend, which was someone's mother trying to tell them about this weekend's Saturday Night Live and a cameo by someone they referred to. They meant Pedro Pascal, but they called him Greg Oreo.
Wow. So,
shout out to that mom, because that's what he's called from now on, canonically.
Greg Oreo.
Yeah.
All right. This is question.
Winner call, Mindy.
Oh,
she's gonna
okay.
find out what it is.
Tara Sorry, has Devendra. Invoked the Mindy weather call okay. on you, Devendra. So this is how it works.
Oh no!
I'm gonna play the clip, but you have to figure it out as the theme song to the Mindy Project plays over it. Here we go.
Your commands have little to no effect on their behavior. Perhaps you should reevaluate your method of controlling them.
Just what I need. Parenting tips from a talking hubcap.
All right, there you go. Any idea there? Don't forget, you can still ask for the clue.
I hate that theme song so much. Can I hear it all again?
Yeah, you can.
Gotcha.
I wasn't ready for that. Okay, here we go.
Your commands have little to no effect on their behavior. Perhaps you should reevaluate your method of controlling them.
Just what I need. Parenting tips from a talking hubcap.
That's the middleman.
That is not the middleman, but I'm impressed you got any guess out of that. Yeah,
that's, we were okay. Yep.
Looking for, I don't know what the hell it is, Isaac from the Orville. Isaac. From
okay, the Orville. Yeah.
Okay.
Sounds very similar to Middleman Lady. Yeah.
Your commands have little to no effect on their behavior. Perhaps you should reevaluate your method of controlling them.
Just what I need. Parenting tips from a talking hubcap.
All right. Sorry, Devinder, but now we know. I had to know.
No, it's all good.
All right. We are to Sarah. Here we go.
Well, if Jack and Otto make strangers think I'm cool, I'll do it.
Can I hear it again, please?
Well, if Jack and Otto make strangers think I'm cool, I'll do it.
This is the robot I've been waiting for the entire game, by the way.
Great. Could I get the robot name, please?
The robot is Bending Rodriguez, I believe is his name.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay.
Bending is his
name. Bender. I feel like I didn't need the last name, but thank you for providing it. I will guess that this is from Futurama.
Yes, got your 1 point. Nicely done. To Tara.
Yes.
Throwing robots.
They are throwing robots.
It's disrespecting us. Shut up, you face.
Shut up, your face.
This is The Simpsons, and that robot is Linguo.
Linguo is correct, yes. 3 point answer. Nicely done. All right, everybody has 2 questions left. This one is for Devendra.
Sorry. Did I say something wrong? Pardon me for breathing, which I never do anyway, so I don't know why I bother to say it. Oh, God, I'm so depressed.
I know where this is from. Name of the robot.
Name of the robot is Marvin the Paranoid Android. It is from a TV show.
Yeah, it would happen.
But perhaps not originally from TV.
I got nothing at this point.
Nothing? Oh, boy. Nerds are coming after you now.
Yeah, sure.
That is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. TV show from the radio play, or
there
maybe
was a
from
TV
the book.
Show? And
yeah, there is a TV. There's a BBC TV show based on the book, based on the radio play, and I think the book came after, but I'm not quite sure about that timeline. Nerds will let me know. All right, Sarah D. Bunting, are you ready for your second last clip?
Maybe.
Let's roll!
I hear that again, sir.
Sure, can't hurt.
Let's roll!
The last sound is crucial.
The robot shit in his pants.
I mean, is it? I need the robot name.
That is Optimus Prime.
Oh, Transformers.
Transformers, good for 1 point. Let's hear that. And I think it might be a robot shit in his pants.
Let's roll.
Oh, no. Oh, no. All right. Back to Tara.
Hello. I'm now in setup mode. I am programmed to take better care of your children than you. I do not feel fear. However, I cannot love your children. Do you wish you could?
Well, that's humans.
Heard of them.
Oh, heard of them.
But I don't remember the robot name.
Anita from
Anita.
Humans. All right. That is it for our one answer questions. So let's get the scores here before everybody's last special question.
Ooh.
Please, Tara.
Oh, boy.
Shit.
Well, Devendra has 7 points. Sarah D. Bunting and I are tied at 13 apiece.
Ooh.
Very exciting.
Ooh.
All right, let's get to it. Everybody has 1 question left that has 2 answers. So you're going to either hear a clip that pertains to 2 different characters, or you're going to hear 2 characters in the clip, both of which are robots.
Okay.
Or something similar. You can still ask for a hint. And then you still can get 2 points. So 4 possible points, 2 after a hint.
Okay.
Here we go. It is for Devendra.
Analysis. Why did you...
Wouldn't you rather speak man to man? Or rather, whatever it is we are.
We are.
That is Westworld.
That is Westworld. Good. All right. Can you give me the names of the 2 characters there?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. We're looking for Maeve and Bernard.
There we go. Characters. That sounds right.
Okay. So 2 points?
Oh, yeah. 2 points.
You said 4 points total.
Yes, yes, yes. Because we got another one there. We'll give them 2.
Okay.
All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
I mean, neither is really springing to my mind exactly, so could I get a hint? in character name form.
All right, I will give you one of the characters. C-3PO.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't really help. Also, there's a million of these fucking shows.
Another character in there and a show. Still to be answered.
Oh, right. Well, I don't know, but let's guess that R2-D2 is in there.
Yeah, we definitely heard R2-D2 there. All right, any idea on the show?
Clone Wars?
Incorrect. Anybody want to steamroll this? It's your last chance to do anything.
Mm-mm.
All right. That show is Droids.
Oh,
Droids,
I wondered.
From the 80s, the cartoon from the 80s.
Okay.
All right, last question is for Tara.
And, Mindy yes. Weathercall, Mindy Weathercall.
All right, Mindy Weathercall for you. This might actually survive the Mindy Weathercall. Let's see how it goes.
Okay.
Are you ready, Tara?
Yes.
That's it. Two possible character names and a show.
I assume there's no repeat shows in here.
There are no repeat shows in here.
Okay.
What are you thinking? What are you thinking of?
I thought it was Kit. It sounded like Kit to
me.
Oh,
I see.
What I
okay.
heard.
You want to hear it again?
Sure. Give me one of the robots.
One of the robots is Jamie Summers.
Oh, God. Okay, is this the $6 million man?
Yes, that is correct. That is the show.
Yeah.
I need the character. You got one character on the table.
Steve?
Steve?
Steve Mann.
Well, you're correct, but we're going to need the full name here.
Okay.
Steve Austin is what we were looking for. Steve? Oh, it was so cute. All right, that is regulation. Let's please get them scores turned.
Okay, Devendra has 9. Sarah and I are still tied.
Oh, shit.
Now with 14.
Okay.
I tried. Tried to Mindy her.
All right, so here's how it works. I have one last question. I'm going to let you know the name of the robot, AI, cyborg, whatever you have you, is also the name of the show.
Okay.
So there's only one answer that can be given.
Okay.
I also want to point out, though, Devendra hasn't used his Mindy Weathercall yet.
That's true.
So
that's
if he wants to play spoiler here, he certainly can. All right. So here we go.
Mindy Weathercall!
It has been invoked for the tiebreaker. We're going to keep on playing this till somebody gets it, or we're just going to have to call
we
it.
We go insane no hearing today. This theme song.
Yeah. He has to leave at some point.
We're just going to hear it for the next half hour until he has to leave. That's all the way he's going to go.
All right.
All right. Here we go. Are you ready, Sarah?
Yes.
Are you ready, Tara?
Sure.
Here we go.
I'm on my way. Look after Penny Brain.
I'm going to play it again.
I'm on my way. Look after Penny Brain.
I don't want to hear it again.
Devendra, do you know it?
I know it.
Without, yeah, you're nodding your head.
I know something. I know things.
One last time.
No, I said I don't want to hear it again. Inspector Gadget.
I'm on my way. Look after Penny Brain.
Jesus. So angry.
Well,
Tara got it correct.
Pay attention.
Good right? job, Tara.
Thank you.
A lot of hostility in game time.
Shocked.
Good thing everybody used their Mindy call, Rogers.
Stunned and saddened that that was Aaron the us apart. Weather call.
I'm scared of what he's going to come up with again.
Tara! Tara.
All right, well, Tara wins, but boy, I don't know at what cost.
Wesley.
All right, guys, that is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. And good for you, Devendra, for actually using it at the end there. There'd be other people who'd be like, no, I want everybody to be happy.
Got
to
spoil some fun. Yeah.
I the tiger.
Yes.
Frankly, I want you to win now. I'm so upset with what just happened. All right, we discovered when all the bodies are buried at Netflix before going around the dial with stops at Savior Complex, RoboDoc, the creation of RoboCop, and the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. We counted down all the ways Aaron's pitch for Star Trek. I did it again. It's called Star Trek again. All the ways Aaron's pitch for star-struck pilot hit the mark. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Tara was the poor winner of this week's Robot Game Time from Potsy. Next up is the spooky season docudrama The Enfield Poltergeist on Extra Extra Hot Great. And on the next ESG Prime is Fellow Travelers. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Arrieta.
I usually don't find men funny.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Homewrecker.
And Devendra Hardawar.
Here still strong.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Grape.
There's nothing in the fridge. I'm going to bed.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.